Star Trek, our favorite frontier. These are the podcasts of Aaron and Polly, their ongoing mission to explore all things Trek, to seek out cool things and pick them apart, to boldly complain as no one's complained before.
And this is Paul.
Welcome back to Star Trek with Aaron and Polly, where, you know, I gotta say, I found people online this week particularly insensitive to my viewing habits.
Aaron, you can't fool around with this, with these last few episodes of Picard. You will need to watch the season, the series finale on Thursday morning. You'll have to wake up and turn on that TV.
I tell you what, I am a much bigger Star Trek fan than I am a Star Wars fan, but I'm a big Star Wars fan, right?
Yes.
And I don't want to mention any names, but Nerdist, I'm looking at you. They spoiled this week's Mando for me. And I mean, Wednesday morning when that show dropped, you know, and I generally don't watch my my Mando and my Star Trek until Friday night. And I mean, I already knew more than I wanted to know going into Mando based on just an image in Instagram that Nerdist published. And I was like, God damn it. And so it put me on edge because, you know, Star Trek Picard drops on Thursdays. And I mean, I almost literally wrapped my foot around my internet cable and unplugged. I mean, I was like outside of social media until I had an opportunity to watch Star Trek Picard.
Yeah.
And fortunately, went in unspoiled. I would have been pissed.
Yeah, this one especially. I mean, don't get me wrong. Mandalorian, we talk about that on our sister show, Funny Books. But, you know, Mandalorian certainly had a lot to be spoiled this episode. But Picard had a lot to be spoiled.
Well, and that was so excellently revealed. And I'm just so thankful that I was able to get in there without, you know, some terrible, awful thing happening.
Yeah, I mean, the official Star Trek Facebook feed is now posting images that spoil the ending of the episode, which, I mean, I guess at the point of this recording, we're 3 days out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, usually you gotta give it like the following Monday. That's my thing. You gotta give it till Monday for a Thursday release. You know, like a movie release. You gotta give it till Monday before you really drop the. No, I think they released some images yesterday, and
of images yesterday. I was noticing, you know, on social media, it's like, God dang! I mean, you know, if you were gonna wait and watch it Saturday night, you could not have been on social media without knowing what had happened.
Yeah. Right. I will say, you know, there's two minds of it, right, as it relates to this, because some people actually find, and I think this is why companies do it, that spoilers actually get people to watch the episode.
Uh-huh.
You know, especially those who have been lapsed Trekkies.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when they see images, and I'm going to spoil this here, when you see images of the original cast and crew on the deck of the Enterprise D,
mm-hmm.
that will probably draw you in. And I'm sure there's, you know, a marketing science behind it. They don't do these things market research.
Well, to your point, for the first time in modern Star Trek, Star Trek Picard episode, you know, season 3, the Vox episode, so mm-hmm. I guess episode 9, was in the top 10 streaming this week.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, that's huge. That's huge. And I think that really sets the table for additional stories in this environment. I think that Paramount Plus will be crazy if they don't make an announcement next week.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, I mean, for what it's worth, I think there's two reasons Well, there's one reason they haven't, and I think it's because they don't want to spoil who survives right. that final episode.
No, absolutely.
Right? You know, well, especially because Jack is 100% in play, you know, as, is he going to make it out of this season?
Or is he going to be a remaining big bad? I mean, he could be what Locutus wasn't, meaning a continuing threat, right?
Like we saw in this episode, there was a character that was killed off in this episode that some people genuinely were hoping to see in that Star Trek Legacy show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before we jump into all the fun details of Star Trek Picard Season 3, Episode 9, Vox, let's talk about some comic books, Paul.
Yes, let's. So, you know, IDW still hasn't come to the conclusion that maybe releasing your two biggest Star Trek comics on the same week is not a good idea, and maybe you should release them a week apart.
Yeah, I don't.
And then you'll have 3 weeks of Star Trek. You'll have your Borg comic or your Borgie comic.
Uh huh.
Then you'll have your Star Trek. Then you'll have your Defiant. But no, they released both of their big releases on the same week. It's almost as if DC released Batman and Superman on the same day.
It's kind of like what Marvel does. Marvel just releases books when they're ready.
Yeah.
You know? And so you'll have a week with, you know, 15 fantastic books that everybody wants to read. And then the next week there's a book, you know?
And perhaps, again, you know, much like the release of spoiler images, perhaps there is some science behind it, some type of marketing science that, you know, you release your biggest releases in 1 week, you get a, you know, you get some press due to your increased market share that week or something.
Yeah.
You know, more powerful together than separate.
I wonder if IDW is coordinating more with Paramount Plus in terms of, hey, we think episode 9 is going to be huge. And so there'll already be a lot of Star Trek press that week. Get in on it. And I mean, they've had this series done and, you know, in the can for a long time. So they've had an opportunity to work on some of this, you know, synergy across their media, right? I wonder if that was part of it. Because it wound up being a pretty big week for Star Trek. You know, we had the teaser images come out for Strange New Worlds, you know, the character posters, and then they did a character video. We saw that. We had, you know, lots of great press about Star Trek Picard and then these two books. I just wonder if maybe that was more, you know, collaborated in terms of the planning.
Very possible. I mean, I think one of the things we've seen about with these Star Trek comics is that there definitely seems to be some, I don't want to say interjection maybe, or in involvement from the people at Paramount as to a certainly selection of characters.
Right.
You know, like Lore, Ro, you know, you're seeing characters pop up in these books suspiciously close to them being prevalent in the TV shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but yeah, I mean, so both comics came out this week. Star Trek number 6, the Benjamin Sisko captained USS
Theseus.
And Star Trek Defiant, you know, which is Worf captaining the Defiant. I have a couple of interesting notes.
Oh, here we go. Interesting notes.
I'm going to start with a high one. One is the Worf that we, because, you know, this kind of goes back to my point about coordination. It's interesting to see Worf, you know, doing things, breaking, you know, rules so significantly and stealing and captaining the USS Defiant, you know, on a Black Ops mission seems especially at this point in time, seems a little contradictory to the fact that he apparently did captain the Enterprise E. at some point, and this takes place all pre-Star Trek Nemesis.
Right.
So it's interesting that so much happened between the Lore stuff and Sisko and Worf, but, you know, again, in the year or months or whatever before Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah.
Because it seems rather significant for none of this to have, I mean, obviously we're retconning, and no one likes Star Trek Nemesis anyway, but this is the problem with writing books that are set between established movie continuity. We see this in the Star Wars comics. It's like you basically have to write around the continuity, and it still doesn't quite make sense. And, you know, this week it was revealed that Worf became captain of the Enterprise E. And it's like, would that really happen given all that, all the shit that he's doing right now in these books? I mean, literally breaking into Starfleet facilities and taking out Starfleet officers, like knocking them out, not murdering them. It felt a little contradictory to me. That being said, go ahead.
Remember in Deep Space Nine where, you know, he and Jadzia, after they're married, go off on a covert op to bring back a Cardassian spy, and who is spying against the Dominion, I think. Mm-hmm. And Jadzia gets hurt, and Worf has to make the choice. He can recover the spy and get the spy to safety and let Jadzia die, or he can save Jadzia and let the spy die. He makes the decision to save Jadzia. Well, at the end of the episode, you know, Sisko says, you know, Starfleet Command has made the decision that you and Jadzia will never get to go off on an op on your own again, and you have lost any opportunity you had for a higher command. And I hate that, you know, that gets resolved. I mean, I get why they don't talk about it in this episode, in mm-hmm. The episode this week, but it just, I'm like, did we all forget that? You know, the Starfleet Command made a decision that Worf would never get to have a larger command.
I mean, you know, things were forgiven in the 10 years, I guess, in between those incidents. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting. And for me, I would have less concern with that as I do with the fact that, again, when you have your books released on the same week,
right,
as the show that established, you know, Captain Worf as canon, uh-huh. It's like, but here he is, like, knocking out some Starfleet officers. Well,
but, you know, that's kind of the history of Star Trek, though. I mean, how many times have we seen Captain Kirk defy orders and, you know, do something that's sketchy, and he still winds up, you know, not that he's getting a promotion for it, but, you know, he still retains his command.
And I'm aware they were wearing masks and they weren't seen. And so that's how you write around your continuity. Mm-hmm. That's why Luke Skywalker and Boba Fett were able to fight in the pages of the Star Wars comic, but Luke was blinded, you know, at the time, so he didn't realize it was Boba Fett. Blah, blah, blah. You know, like, you know, you write these silly stories instead of like, hey man, if you just set this like a year after the events of Nemesis, I would have almost none of these issues.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's besides the point. I will say, let me start by saying, we're way past the start point. Let me continue by saying, as much as I disliked the last few issues of Star Trek, mm-hmm. I genuinely liked issue 6.
I thought I did too. I thought that it was, the artwork was very cinematic. Mm-hmm. I liked, you know, it felt like a big action piece.
And it felt like Sisko.
Yes. Again.
Well, I understand maybe that was the point.
Yeah. But yeah, I hated that we spent so many issues with him not feeling like Sisko.
Yeah.
But I do like how in story they resolve that, right? That he makes a conscious choice to be the man and the father versus the prophet, you know? I very much enjoyed that. I thought the images were great, big and grand, and I thought it was a really nice wrap up to this arc. I just wish we had seen more of this throughout the series.
Yeah, and you know, Captain Data, mm-hmm. you know, acting Captain Data was great. Mm-hmm. Again, one of the things that I will say, one of the biggest things I dislike about this comic is those text pages.
Yes.
I understand it's a writer's choice to add those text pages to have exposition or, you know, kind of have these points that they want to make, you know, outside of scenes, right? You can make a point in a page of text that would take 10 pages of comic.
Yeah.
And I understand that that's what they're trying to do.
Yep.
I will find, you know, because there's two of them in this. I have found myself just basically skipping them. I did give this one a shot this week because they have this essay by Jake Sisko.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe this is the point, but it certainly feels like it's written by like a 15-year-old. I'm like, wow, this is terrible. Those text pages, I will say, they do need to revisit them at some point to say, are they truly adding anything to the story? Because I'm not missing anything by skipping them.
Yeah. Well, and I read them just because I'm like, well, this is the last issue of this arc. I'll read these because there may be something meaningful. And nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, and even in terms of flavor text, I don't feel like it added anything.
And that's why I stopped reading them, because I would skip them. I'm like, no, I bet you they have important stuff.
Yeah.
And they never actually do.
And that is a true statement in this issue of Star Trek Defiant as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole, I mean, other than giving you some detail on Trilithium, which, you know, they had already done in the context of the story. You didn't need any of that flavor text that they added. And again, not adding much flavor. It's more like a paprika than a cumin.
Yeah, exactly. it's a garnish, not so, a...
I do feel like Star Trek Defiant is the superior book of these two. However, I gotta say, I thought the cover, or I should say cover A, which was the featured digital cover,
mm-hmm.
In my Comixology download, I thought it was a shitty-ass cover.
You mean with Lore's head?
Yeah, and the glowy eye. I think that's a terrible cover.
You know, it certainly isn't impactful.
Yeah.
It
does nothing to sell the book. If I saw this sitting on the newsstand, I would probably walk right by it.
Mm-hmm.
It just did nothing to sell it. I think that it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake in your Star Trek books to not feature a Star Trek spaceship on the cover in some way, shape, or form. It doesn't have to be the predominant issue, the predominant image, I mean to say. But there should always be a spaceship on a Star Trek cover. Because so many of us, our first love of Star Trek is the design of the spaceships.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think anybody, other than perhaps Brent Spiner, is attracted to the head of Data and Lore. It's a terrible cover. I guess what I find so objectionable about it is it has that look of a digital illustration from the 1990s.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't even look like current day digital imaging. It just, boy, it's a really unattractive cover.
It looks like one of those techno comics covers from back in the day.
Yeah.
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 You know, I find, speaking of the art, a couple of artistic choices were made in this book.
Mm-hmm.
One of them I actually like, and it took me a second to catch up on it, is that when the transporter is used to, you know, to enable a change in location, like Spock and Worf are talking on the Defiant,
mm-hmm.
and then in the next panel, they're surface of the planet.
Yeah, and that same conversation is in progress.
Yeah, and but in between the panels, you see a teleporter effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of that scene, you see a teleporter effect, and they're back on the bridge. I like that transition.
Yeah.
I thought that was, that is an intelligent way of saying, here's why we're switching locations, and here's how they got there without, pandering.
Yeah.
So I like that. One of the things that I don't care for in this book,
mm-hmm.
I do not care for the spaceship art. I think the detail is present on the ships themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are over engineered in digital effects.
Yeah,
and it cheapens it.
Well, I feel like the Defiant illustrations are superior to the alien ship.
Yeah.
And that's because the Defiant, they've got a real model to work from. Mm-hmm. Somebody on the creative team had to create the Orion spaceship, which looks ridiculous. It's got the sprawling wings and almost like a Hornet sort of sensor dish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost phallic in the way the sensor disc is. You know, hey, look, I've got my sharp space penis pointed right at you. Yeah, I don't care for that one little bit.
I feel like, to a certain extent with these books, I feel like they either need to commit to two artists,
mm-hmm.
one who specializes in because you don't need – it's not like they're drawing in the same panel. Yeah. So I think you should commit to two artists, one, who may lay out the space scenes, but one who actually, draws them, or switch to some type of digital art.
You know, that's funny that you say that. When I was in high school, I used to draw a comic book, mm-hmm. For me and my friends, and I could not draw an Enterprise to save my life. And so I had this buddy who is very technical in the way he drew, and he would draw the spaceships. And so I would draw all the character art and you know, the panel to panel, and I'd lay out, and then I'd hand him the page and say, okay, here's what I need here in this panel. And so we would do exactly that. We problem solved for that back when I was a sophomore in high school. I'm just saying.
Yeah. See, I mean, I feel like that's what they should do. I mean, literally just hire Jake Parker.
Uh-huh.
To do
and
your
my
space
friend
scenes.
And my friend Phil,
and Aaron's friend Phil, and friend of the podcast Jake Parker.
That's right.
You know, just that's all you need, because I feel like it is a rare bird that can do both, and even then, they certainly do one better than the other. And you know, the ones who can do ships well sometimes do them well. From a detail perspective, but not so much from a movement perspective. You don't feel the movement. It just feels like they drew the spaceship and someone went and took digital special effects to give the illusion of movement. And that's what this book feels like. Yeah. The artist drew a spaceship, a static spaceship, and they threw, like, I don't know, these weird white trails behind it to imitate movement.
Right.
You know, or you know, threw clouds in there, stuff like that. And it's not working for me on the space. I mean, details there. But it kind of, like the cover, it almost feels like someone's just discovering,
right?
You know,
digital tools,
you know, in Adobe, and applying all of them in a comic, like, again, like your 90s techno comics. Yeah.
There is one panel that worked really well for me, and it is digitally manipulated. And that is a scene where Ro is on the bridge of the Defiant talking to the Orions. Mm-hmm. And they've got this nice, you know, it catches the bridge from the side, and she's standing, leaning over the helm controls. And the screen on the bridge, the view screen, is, you know, has got this very dramatic perspective to it. And so the image is 2D, and so the image on the screen is also very dramatic in its perspective. And it's all digitally lit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the illumination from the view screen. And I feel like that panel works beautifully.
Yeah, I agree. I
mean, you feel like you're on the bridge. It's just the... That clearly was a circumstance where that digital illustration works. It doesn't work elsewhere. And, you know, Paul, if you flip to the next page, there is a four-panel scene at the top of the next page where Spock, Worf, B'Elanna, and Ro are all talking.
Mm-hmm.
They adjust, like, it goes from left to right with Spock filling up the majority of his panel, Worf filling up a little bit less, B'Elanna a little bit less, and at the minimum, you know, Ro. And I don't think they're trying to tell us a visual story there where someone is more competent, more, you know, bold. You know, I don't feel like we're drawing something from it. I just feel like that was an error, because that when you look at that page all together, the composition of that is like, hello, 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 hello.
I mean, you're not wrong. You know, it is kind of funny. You know, I do feel like it's an intentional choice, but it kind of just gives the impression that Ro is the shortest one or something.
Well, and it, like, she's a little girl.
Yeah.
And she's not. I mean, she and B'Elanna are about the same age and about the same build. In fact, if anything, I think Michelle Forbes is a little bit taller than Roxanne Dawson. And certainly, you know, Worf is at least the same height as Spock, if not taller. I don't understand the choice there. And I can't fathom what it is they're trying to communicate with making each person shorter than the last.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's definitely an artistic choice. It just doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah, but the story worked fine for me. You know, I thought the story was great. It was entertaining. It was believable. I liked how the characters are really coming together and working. I think B'Elanna is much more interesting here than she ever was on Voyager.
Yeah.
You know, because I was never a B'Elanna fan on Voyager. But I kind of like how badass she is. And I kind of dig how both she and Worf get offended, you know, on behalf of... you know, Klingon culture when it's being insulted by the Orions. You know, there's a great scene where one of the Orions says, "You want my opinion? Maybe the Red Path just allows Klingons to be the savages they've always been."
Yeah.
And like, Worf, I mean, and this really, there is a lovely illustration on this panel, because you can tell the disdain and the offense that Worf is feeling. It's like, if you wish to challenge me, then say the words. And B'Elanna throws in, "Yeah, say them." And I'm like, I am so here for this relationship.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, yeah, I want to see more of this. I want to see Worf and B'Elanna kicking ass across the quadrant. That's the book I want.
Well, maybe that's the book we're going to get.
I hope so. And I like that we got over on the Orions, because, you know, everybody hates the Orions. But then, of course, double cross.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Orions fuck them over. I liked this book. We spent a lot of time carping, even complaining a bit, you know, which is on brand for our podcast, about the artwork. But overall, I really like the Star Trek Defiant book.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed both of them this week.
Yeah, yeah. So good stuff. Thank you, IDW Publishing. We appreciate the work you're doing there in the Star Trek comic book space. But Paul,
yes, sir.
Are you ready to talk about Star Trek Picard Season 3, Episode 9, Vox?
I think we are, Aaron.
So, you know, I have concerns that perhaps Deanna Troi may be in my HMO network. because she demonstrates here what a shitty, shitty therapist she is. Because I'd like to point out, she spends a lot of time telling her patient, Mr. Jack Crusher, that whatever this is, we'll handle it together. And the minute she finds out what it is, she is out the fucking door.
Yeah, she does run, and she breaks all sorts of HIPAA violations.
Oh, my God. I mean, all of his protected health information out the door. Just putting it out there on Maine.
Just telling everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, wow. Wow. So, you know, Deanna has a little therapy session where she's, you know, doing her whole Betazoid empathic thing and getting all up in Jack Crusher's head. And, you know, we see the red door that he has been seeing in his mind for a long, long time. She sees all the vines, the creepy vines that, you know, gave us images of the Upside Down from Stranger Things, you know. And he makes the comment, you know, she says, what do vines mean to you? And he's like, connection. You know, even though you can't see it, things are connected. And he talks about his experience in an arboretum where, you know, beneath the ground, all the vines for the flowers and whatnot were all interconnected, you know, demonstrating a larger collective organism. And so she says, hey, you know, you want me to open up this red door for you? I'll be here right with you. I'm going to be right here with you. Sure, yeah, open it up. She opens it up and again goes screaming from the room.
I shouldn't have opened your door, sorry.
And she doesn't tell the patient what the fuck she saw. She runs to Picard and Dr. Crusher and says, yeah, your kid, he's got a case of the Borg.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my prior theories, I mean, we've talked about the Borg as an option, but, I was like, they just did the Borg last season, so I really didn't think they were going to go back to the Borg well. But, you know, I will say they have, you know, Shaw earlier in the season said no one counted that weird Borg shit that happened last year as real as Borg. Like, no one counts that one.
Yeah. I feel like that's the writers saying we really don't.
We don't count it either.
We don't count seasons one or two.
Well, except, you know, obviously we need season one in order for this to have happened-ish.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, I guess.
You got to have dead Picard to make all of this happen.
Yeah, you've got to have dead Picard to make all of this happen.
But, and I will say that did bug me when Beverly says, you know, no one's heard from the Borg in a decade. And I'm like, well, literally last season. And I feel like Picard should have said that. That's just one of those missed lines, like, literally last season we had a Borg thing.
Well, I met the Borg last, you know, I thought the Borg were better, but maybe they're not listening to Jurati or something that.
I just needed some connective tissue there. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, so what has happened is the, what we thought was Iromatic syndrome, the disease that killed Picard, was actually a genetic coding from the Borg that didn't really set well with him. It never really took off because it was built to make Picard a transmitter as well as a receiver. He was doing the receiving part of the Borg. Remember, even after all of his Borg implants were taken out, he could still hear the Borg. He could still sense the Borg.
But that was never really explained. I mean, we just kind of thought it was...
Just always, you know, in my head canon, it was just always, you know, I guess even though you took all the big parts out of him, there's still little parts in there, right?
Yeah.
That they couldn't get.
Which is basically what it is, right?
Yeah. But, you know, what we find out is this technology is not, you know, hardwired as Borg components usually are. They're not even nanoprobes. It's an organic modification. And so it's creating, you know, an organic, sort of like a telepath, you know, that's being able to push out thoughts and even control thoughts, which is what we've seen Jack do in previous episodes. And we even get to see him do some of it in this episode. Mm-hmm. But it didn't take off in Picard, but, you know, in his child, you know, Jack Crusher, it has taken root. And, you know, my headcanon tells me that, you know, he has been transmitting all along and just never knew it. And the Borg heard it, and that's why the Borg entered into this relationship with the changelings to, you know, bring Jack Crusher home without drawing a whole bunch of attention to the Borg. That's just kind of where my head's at on it. Mm-hmm. Here's my complaint. We spent 8 episodes in this season thinking that the changelings were the threat.
Yeah.
I fear we're not going to get any time at all, because we've got just the one episode left. I fear we're not going to get any time at all understanding how the Borg and the changelings came together and, you know, how that's working.
Right? You know, it's funny. I had this conversation earlier this week. Because with the reveal of the Borgs and the fact that the Borg has the ability to control... I mean, they didn't technically have until they got possession of Jack. They technically didn't have the ability to control all the Starfleet people that now have a little bit of Borg in them, you know, from the transporters.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like, for what it's worth, what was the point of the changelings?
Right.
Because if the Borg could control the Starfleet officers, that's really all they needed to do.
Yeah.
Right. You know, to begin with, they didn't really need the, you know, and there was really no mention of the changelings in this episode at all.
Yeah.
So it's like, are they off the table? Are we going to see that resolved? Is it going to maybe be something that they, you know, save for the spinoff? I'm very curious as to
how that's going to resolve. Like, I feel like, and I know we've been wrong all through the season, right?
True.
But I feel like there's too much to resolve in the one remaining episode. I feel like we're going to get some kind of resolution, but there will be numerous dangling threads to feed into a subsequent series.
And that's very possible.
I'm like, how do you clean all this up without it just feeling like you're checking off a list? I really would very much like to see how Changeling and Borg came together. I think that's a super interesting story, and I know there's just no time to get it. And I still have a hard time believing that Vadic is off the table. Vadic, whatever.
She's off the table. She exploded.
I know, but I mean, still, it just seems like she was just gone so soon.
No, she's gone.
Yeah, you'll see.
Yeah, Vadic, she's dead. But, so do you think? I think the Changeling thing. I hope to see some resolution, but I just don't think we will. I think the series will end, and they'll say, but we still don't know how deep the Changelings go in Starfleet,
right?
You know, and that'll be in left for the spinoff. Because, like you said, it's a lot to resolve. Because technically, now we have a Borg Queen. It feels like we should have a movie-length episode remaining.
Right. Yeah,
and it still is only enough to resolve maybe the Borg. Yeah. Right, we have to resolve the Borg, the status of this, you know, reformed Enterprise D crew, the legacy children, and, you know, in theory, sent Picard off on his way because this is it, right? So that feels like a lot to resolve and throw in the changeling thing. So I feel like the changelings may be just, there may be a comment, but I don't think we'll actually see any resolution there.
Yeah, we get to see, you know, Jack flees the Titan, right? Because Picard's like, oh, we got protocols for this shit. You know, we're going to have to lock you down and perhaps lobotomize you. And which, you know, is hard to hear.
Yeah.
It's hard to hear that you're going to be imprisoned and lobotomized. And so, you know, Jack leans into his mind control and gets his way off the ship, runs right into the waiting arms of the Borg Queen. So it sounded like that was Alice Krieg's voice. For the Borg Queen, even though we don't get to see her, we just kind of get to see the back of her head. Do you think we'll actually get to see her? Do you actually think we'll get some Borg Queen next episode, Paul? Because I'm really,
you
I love
can't
Alice
introduce Krieg. A Borg Queen and just only show her from behind.
Yeah, I feel like we've got to get some. I mean, I know that she, you know, how many years has it been since First Contact? 20 years? 15 years? I know that she, you know, she's not going to look the same, but, you know, Borgs are heavenly made up anyway. I'm sure they can make it work. You know, I'm really eager to see her. And, you know, she's got a delicious voice. She really does. I mean, I love Susanna Thompson in the role as well. But if you got Alice Krieg, I need to see me some Alice Krieg.
Well, and that is also not the only returning voice that we had in this episode.
What are you saying, Paul?
I'm saying you know, jumping to the end of the episode. You know, Starfleet, the new ships are all connected. All Starfleet ships are basically connected almost like your car is, you know, to a central nervous system, you know, very Borg-like in nature.
Are you saying that Elon Musk is going to put all of our cars into fleet formation, Paul?
Possibly.
Is that where you're going with this?
So basically, Starfleet has built a hive mind, and I don't think that actually has anything to do with the Borg. I think Starfleet took inspiration from the Borg,
sure. Yeah.
And, you know, put this one kind of connected computer system in all the ships. So the crew, you know, the classics, the Core 7 have to basically come up. Well, we need to get one of those old cars that doesn't have that's not connected to the server. And so Geordi has taken on a pet project of refurbishing the Enterprise D.
Find it hilarious that Geordi is, you know, restoring an old car in his garage.
Exactly. Geordi is restoring an old car in his garage.
I think that's hysterical.
That doesn't have that high-tech nonsense connected
that's
to
right.
the Borg hive.
Doesn't have one of these bogus catalytic converters.
Yeah, exactly. And so they take the Dodge Charger out, basically. And the original crew is back on the Enterprise D, as is the voice of Michelle Barrett.
Yeah, Major Barrett. Yeah, when her voice comes up as the voice of the computer, I just smiled. I beamed from ear to ear. I love Major Barrett's voice as the computer.
And I've got to imagine that's not resampling. That's just it's not that that fancy computer tech that they use in Star Wars. I think it's actually just
I think they clipped it from an old episode, but. You know, there was talk years ago that they had Major Barrett Roddenberry record, you know, enough voice elements for them to be able to reproduce her voice. And then nothing ever came from that. And I still wait for the opportunity to turn my Alexa or my Siri into the computer from Star Trek, voiced by Major Barrett Roddenberry. And until that happens, I will have no active AI in this house.
You shouldn't anyway, Aaron.
Well, I'm just saying.
Isn't going well.
I am willing to give up a lot of personal liberty if I can have me some Major Barrett Roddenberry talking to me.
In
so
400 years in the future, it still doesn't go well.
Major Barrett Roddenberry turns up to be Control.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny. In the conclusion of this episode, you know, the Borg have taken. Yeah, so it's been revealed that the Borg have basically implanted a little bit of Borg in everyone who's used a teleporter over the past years. Except, you know, but
well,
it only
that's
really
why
takes,
they needed the changelings, Paul. They needed the changelings to infiltrate Starfleet to put the Borg, the Locutus DNA matrix, you know, clipped from Picard's dead body, to put it into the transporter code so that any being transporting, you know, through the transporter gets that code so that they can be a receiver from Jack Crusher.
I hear you. I'm just saying, yeah, that could probably be explained away in an episode or two, not, mm-hmm. you know, to your point, 8 episodes of feeling that we have one villain when it's really the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, but it only really takes, apparently, for the younger Starfleet members.
Yeah, if you're under the age of 25, when your prefrontal cortex is still in development, it will land.
Yeah.
But those who are older than 25, it doesn't work so well.
Yeah, so the old crew, you know, clearly...
It cracks me up that they're the only ones older than 25, apparently, on the ship.
Well, I mean, Shaw, but he died.
Yeah, but I mean, you hear a lot of non-Borg screaming as they're getting shot down by their crewmates, but it just cracks me up. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. You don't have some other 30-year-olds on the ship. Why is the gap 25 years, right?
You're either 25 or you're 70.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when Jerry Ryan is the youngest crew member unaffected.
But you know what was interesting in that final sequence, and I know there's a couple of other bits we want to hit on, but I keep jumping down back to the end, is, you know, so the crew, you know, the original crew, the Next Generation crew, I should say, basically, you know, gets on a shuttle to escape the Theseus. No, not the Theseus. What's the Titan?
Yeah.
You know, to escape the Titan. And I'm getting my Star Trek's mixed up.
I know. They're all converging, Paul.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, it occurred to me, I'm like, wait, where's Raffi? And then you see her in the background,
yeah,
is escaping with them. She really had, as soon as they, you know, got rid of that, the Ferengi, Ferengi crime boss
that they killed. Yeah.
Yeah. There has been zero purpose for Raffi.
Yeah.
You know, she's basically...
Other than I think she'll have a role in the last episode.
I don't know that she will.
I think she will. I think she and... So what happens at the end of this episode, or towards the end of this episode, is that the TNG crew jumps into a maintenance shuttle that they... You know, they realize that the maintenance shuttles are not linked to the fleet mode, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because Starfleet has deployed this fleet mode that allows them to control all starships everywhere in the fleet, and do things like fleet formation so they can become just a giant, you know, a giant spread of danger. I'm going to stop for just a second and say, you know, they form up into these groups, you know, so that they can, you know, enhance their attacks. I don't. The formation was weird looking to me.
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly what they were getting for.
Yeah, I don't know why that shape is better than another shape. It just seemed weird to me. But anyway, so you know, the minute the Titan pulls into the Sol system, you know, they are immediately, you know, all of their technology is overwhelmed and they lose control of it because they're linked. Even before the Borg start doing their stuff, the Federation is already linked in, you know, because they are able to control this stuff. So they identify that the maintenance shuttles are not part of this link, that they don't submit to the same sort of control that the main ship does. So they're able to escape in a maintenance shuttle. When there is a little bit of humor in this episode that I found exquisitely placed and awfully funny. Like, for instance, when Seven agrees with Data and says, "The robot's right." And the look on Data's face, like, "Hey!" I thought that was... I'm sure on the page it doesn't read nearly as funny as it comes across. You know, when the cyborg is besmirching the android, I found that awfully funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that awfully funny. But, you know, they get, you know, over to the Daystrom Station, but rather the Fleet Museum.
Yeah.
And, you know, they learned that Geordi had recovered the original Enterprise D saucer, and then, you know, started pulling parts from other Galaxy class cruisers to rebuild this ship. And Paul, I gotta tell you, you know, when they walk onto the bridge of the Enterprise D and everything lights up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just felt like coming home.
It did.
You know, and as ridiculous as that feels, right? I mean, as ridiculous as that seems, I should say, that, you know, we're going to get this scene with this old ship that you know, they killed off in Generations, that Geordi has been rebuilding it for 20 years. Yeah, just, you know, kind of been working on this in my spare time, you know. you know, I've been working on it in spare time, and, you know, there are photon torpedoes downstairs, so, you know, yay. I would just kind of cracked up about that. And then Picard says the same thing that I was thinking. And that's been one of those things I've loved about this series. You know, he says, you know, the thing that I've missed the most in all these years, the carpet. I loved how lovingly they recreated that set. And they upgraded it. I mean, I love the flat screens and the monitors and how all of that works. I mean, they really sort of, they did the thing that Star Trek has done so poorly in previous iterations, is that they upgrade without discarding, right?
Yeah.
They made it more screen appropriate for HD without throwing out the design aesthetic. So you felt like you were on the bridge of the Enterprise D, but you also had better tools.
Yeah.
You know, that still fit within the aesthetic. I loved it.
There were lights on it. There were lights on this bridge. Yeah. You can see the bridge.
You can see what's going on.
Because basically bridges nowadays, since Discovery, have been, which is funny, because it feels like Discovery took the wrong notes from J.J. Abrams on that. Because since Discovery, bridges have basically been black, gray, with some lights around them, almost like a nightclub.
Yeah.
But whereas J.J. Abrams' bridges were super brightly lit,
right?
You know,
yeah,
the whites and light grays.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know, what's come since then, because that's how Picard has been, that's how Discovery has been. Strange New Worlds a little bit better, but yeah, I mean, it was like,
Completely agree.
Yeah,
completely agree. I really did dig, you know, how they did all that, and I. This season has been so well written because, you know, you think of callbacks, you know, and what the nostalgia of them being on the D, and, you know, you're living in that moment, and all that I can remember, all that the phrase that's coming back to my head is early on, maybe even episode one, of them being at Guinan's, and, you know, Riker sees that Guinan is selling, you know, the little ships, the little Eagle Moss ships.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says, hey, where's the Enterprise D? And the bartender says, nobody likes the fat one.
Yeah.
And here we are loving the fat one.
The fat one. The fat one's back. And that was foreshadowing, right, from the very beginning.
Absolutely. You know, you didn't know that then.
No.
But, you know, you make that connection. And that's what's so beautiful about the way this is written, is that you're like, oh, yeah, I see what they did there. That's art. That's artistic. you know, that really takes skill.
I will say the only thing, I know there's an episode left.
Uh-huh.
But with all the fan service, all the fan service, including a returning character in this episode that we've had, they still haven't found a way to bring O'Brien in.
Yeah.
Like, all I want to see is O'Brien.
Yeah, a little Colomini.
Yeah, just give me some
Colomini. Maybe he could have been helping Geordi work on the D.
Exactly. Yeah, he could radio up. Like,
yeah.
Hey, Geordi, you know, like, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's been helping me, he's been helping me put this together.
He has to get away from Keiko.
Yeah, that would make me so happy. And fans been wanting it. You know, there's fan art and all that stuff. So it's interesting that with all the fan service, and he's still acting. You know, I just saw him at a TV show recently. So
No, he's a busy guy.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I delighted seeing Elizabeth Dennehy return to Star Trek as Admiral Shelby, and it killed me when she dies on screen.
Yeah.
I mean, just murdered me. I was like, oh.
Well, murdered her too.
Yeah. I'm just like, we've waited so long to get, you know, Admiral Shelby, and dead.
Yeah.
Admiral Shelby is dead. Kind of hate that.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for the crew of the Excelsior. RIP USS Excelsior.
Yeah.
You know. Wow. Hey, look, we've got control of our ship. We, you know, we've gotten rid of the Borg. Hey, we're getting sucked out in front of the fleet formation. Tell my family. Bleep. You know, one of the things that I think they've done really well in this season is, you know, essentially this entire season's been a bottle episode. We've really not spent a lot of time in other places other than our ships. Yeah. You know, there's been a couple of times on Metallus Prime or whatever it is. But they are very economical in effects and sets and whatnot. In fact, you know, we're in the turbo lift, I think, and, you know, we're hearing about, you know, the USS Excelsior. And you don't see the USS Excelsior. You don't get, you know, a beautiful special effects scene of this starship moving out of formation and then being murdered. What you see is the tactical image on a screen in the turbo lift. You know, yeah. It expertly tells you what's going on in the scene without them having to spend $1 billion on creating the effect.
I'm sure that was a money-saving device, but it was well done.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it did exactly what it needed to do in the story, and I'm just like, you know, that these creators, these producers, these writers and directors are just experts at what they do. You know, because you don't feel that. And in fact, it was only on the second viewing that I'm like, you know, a lot of shit happens in corridors on this show. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the whole scenes with Jack and the vines and the red door. That's all just in a corridor, right? Hallway. And then you've got the big scene before they, you know, jump off to, you know, escape in the maintenance shuttle, just in a hallway that they've put some crates in. And it doesn't really bother you, right? Like I said, it was only on my second viewing that I'm like, hey, sure are spending some time in some hallways, but that's saving money.
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's probably the same damn hallway.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure they're just redressing the same hallway. Yeah. You know, at the end of the episode when they all run off to, you know, go to the Fleet Museum and you know, see what's in Geordi's garage, Raffi and Seven stay on the Titan. Which seems suicidal to me, given that the drones are going around killing everybody who's unassimilated. But that's why I think that we'll see some heroic scene with Raffi in the last episode. Would not be surprised to see Raffi die in the last episode.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. But, you know, Paul, next week, for those who are willing to stand in line, you can go see the last two episodes of Star Trek Picard Season 3, the final season, on the big damn screen, on an IMAX screen.
Yeah.
I am not going to be one of those people because I don't have all day to stand in line to get in. But
I imagine it's free, so they're going to oversell it, right? It's for Paramount Plus members only, which I will tell you, I have found that I don't think, because you have to log into your Paramount Plus account to register for it. Uh-huh. And I don't believe if you are a Paramount Plus member through Prime, it works.
Oh.
I think you have to, because I've noticed that.
That's got to be a pisser.
That, you know, like, you can't just put in your Amazon Prime account.
Yeah.
You have to have a Paramount Plus login. And so, yeah, in past things, I've noticed that that you need to be an actual Paramount Plus member. I could be wrong, and, you know, someone listening, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's been my experience.
Well, I have no desire to stand in line all day. I will watch the last episode on my own Thursday morning right here in my home.
Yeah. No, that being said, I would rather it was more open, because there's not the closest one, I think, to me is about 3 hours away. And I'm not driving 3 hours there to and fro for something that literally I can just wake up in the morning and watch.
Would be fun to see, though.
It would be fun to see. I would rather they had a wider release, you know, like one of those Fathom events, and make it a paid event, and I would go. Same.
Yeah, absolutely. If it was a paid event where I could buy my seat, I would absolutely do it. But I'm not gonna go stand in line for it. But so I'm very excited for this last episode. I am just so pleased at how well this season has come together, and I really hope we get more in this same vein in a subsequent Star Trek show. I can't wait, Paul.
Me either. I can't. Very exciting.
All right. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought of this week's Star Trek comics and Star Trek Picard. Give us a call at 682-800-3494. That number to call, once again, 682-800-3494. If we use your voicemail on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also engage with us on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
What a deal. Well, Paul, I am ready to receive the transmission for next week's episode of Star Trek with Aaron and Polly.
Same here. We'll see you then.
Bye. Star Trek with Aaron and Polly is a production of IOMgeek.com. Have a question or comment? Hailing frequencies are open at 972-763-5903. Tribble wrangling provided by Triskelion Trays, no troublesome tribbles. Mr. Aponte's wardrobe provided courtesy of Garrick's Clothiers, conveniently located on the promenade.